23, 24, 25.
Wait, Mark, what are you really doing?
Contain the dog food.
Seriously?
You know how expensive imported dog food is? I gotta make sure this lasts until month end.
Don't be stingy with Fluffy's food. I told you to stretch your dollar. Buy Robert's or Vitapet dog food. It got in the same thing as them other brands, but it's less expensive.
Save money and support local with Robert's chicken and rice and Vitapet dog and puppy food from Vitamin Pet Foods.
Fluffy's so smart. Watch. The rain falls on the
roof.
See?
Okay, and with that, let's go right over to our host for the evening and say a very good evening to Gail Hunt. She will present to you the program Animal Craze. Of course, she has her guests all lined up. So let's say a very good evening to Gail and her guests.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening, everyone.
Hi, good evening. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Go right ahead, please.
Oh, brilliant. I couldn't hear anyone for a moment. Hi, Gregson. How are you doing today?
I am not too bad at all. I believe all the other guests can hear you because they said good evening as well. So you're free to proceed.
That's brilliant. Okay, so we will get straight into it. So I'd like to say a warm welcome to our listeners. And if you're new to listening to Animal Craze, you're very welcome. Hope you enjoy the show. So this evening, we are very lucky to have a very special guest with us all the way from South Africa. And he's really kind of like, you know, come out on a limb for us because it's late there at the moment there because of the time difference. So thank you very much, Dave. And I'm going to let you introduce yourself, but I will say that he is the co-founder and director of the Vervet Monkey Foundation in South Africa. And he's going to be here today to tell us all about his work, how he became in this worthwhile project of helping the vervet monkeys and primates, and a bit about his background. So, Dave, it's lovely to have you with us. Your name is Dave Dutoit, and please introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us a little bit about your background growing up in South Africa and who you are.
Okay, thanks, Gail. Well, as you did mention, I am the founder and co-director of the Vervet Monkey Foundation. I've been working with vervets for over 30 years in South Africa. And basically, we provide a facility for any orphaned or injured little animals that basically find themselves into trouble in South Africa. And we also try and go out and educate people on how to live with these animals, because naturally, they also, I'm assuming, in the same in your country, are assumed to be pests. So there's a lot of education necessary, which we try and go out and teach the farmers and things like that, just how to manage with these animals and how to farm with them. And of course, providing a safe haven for any of the orphans that come around.
Okay, that's absolutely wonderful. So, and how was it, what was it like growing up in South Africa, in terms of like the abundance of wildlife that you have out there?
Well, look, we still have got quite a lot of wildlife around in South Africa. I mean, naturally, it's all contained nowadays. It's not all just roaming free, but there are certain the smaller buck species and things like that still out in the farming communities. And a lot of your smaller wild animals are still around. But your bigger predators are sort of contained in government parks and things like that, but
right.
You know, still around, you still can see things.
Okay, and I guess the reason that they will be contained, as you say, is kind of conservation efforts, is that correct?
Yes, I think it all started off to protect them. So I mean, you're sort of having reserves that are protecting animals in a way from just totally being wiped out, which I think has become fairly important.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. So thank you very much for sharing your background to our listeners. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you are the director of the Vervet Foundation. And one of the primary roles is centered around the rescue and the rehabilitation of the African green monkey. So can you tell our listeners more about the work of the foundation and your role in helping these primates?
Well, basically, we do have a little bit of a problem in this country with people thinking these animals are kind of pests. So a lot of times they get shots and things like that. And these are like Unfortunately, with Berberts, it's a family group or a troop. The troop is sort of made up of various families, about four or five families, which makes their size about anything up to 50, 70, 100 strong. So a troop would be anything 50 to 100 monkeys. We're not actually seeing that anymore. So today, a lot of times we're seeing troops, well, we see families. I want to get away from the troop thing because you're seeing animals from about 15 to 25, which is actually a family of Berberts. Now, family of Berberts is not a survivable amount of animals. They're slowly dying off. So this has become a problem. So it's one of the things of making people aware of this kind of situation that we have to start paying attention to this type of thing at the moment. The other thing is also speaking to farmers and trying to educate them about leaving enough food sources, not just for Berbert monkeys, but we've got a lot of smaller game species that also need to feed. And unfortunately, man is, I'd like to say a selfish species. We sort of think we can buy something and own it, and we allow to do everything that we like on this piece of ground or whatever that we own. So instead of providing for the animals or things that were there, and then the problem is when we get a problem from these animals, we start blaming them instead of looking at ourselves and say, well, what did I do wrong? So prevention is a very, very important thing, and is something we have to take into consideration.
Okay, thank you very much for sharing that, Dave. And in terms of your rehabilitation work, what does that normally involve then? What type of monkeys are you typically seeing? Because I know there's ex-lab monkeys that would have been used for laboratory experiments as well.
That's just our security. We don't really work much with lab animals. Yeah, a lot of that stuff ought to get closed quite a while ago. So,
That's good.
Yeah, it's not really a big thing. So most of our animals come because of accidents on roads and things like this, where they get knocked down, or basically because these animals only have one young every year, and at a certain time of the year, which seems to be coincide with kind of the fruiting time of most of the crops, is when some of the females also get shot. So you get these little babies left behind. So, you know, it's those animals. We got a program where we get these little orphans back to foster mother monkeys so that they can look after them again, and they sort of live out in these natural environments for eventual release back into the wild.
That is so interesting. So what you're saying basically is once the baby monkeys are orphaned, you're able to pair them with a foster monkey that will then kind of like nurse it. So that's a very kind of like instinctual nurturing thing, because some people may think that the monkeys will be hostile or aggressive because it's not their offspring directly.
Monkeys are hostile if it's not the offspring, unfortunately. So it isn't something that you can just find a little orphan somewhere over to a family of monkeys. They will kill it.
How do you get the foster carer, the foster mother then, to actually nurture the orphan?
Look, it is like a little bit of a process. It's kind of an introduction of the little one to the mother. So the most important thing, first of all, is making sure the little orphan can drink milk on its own, because it's not going to get any milk from the mother.
Right.
So that is the biggest step in this process. And once we've got the little one drinking or taught it how to go into a special feeding cage, then we begin a slow process of introducing them to the troop, which will normally be an introduction cage on the side of the enclosure, and getting the female monkeys to come over and have a look and seeing the little one and getting used to the little one, making sure there's no other mother that's going to attack them and things like this. And then we'd let the lowest ranking female into the enclosure with the little orphan. And normally she starts nurturing and looking after the little one.
Okay. So any given time, David, how many orphan monkeys and monkeys would you have at the sanctuary?
Well, currently I look after close to 600 Berbert monkeys, and we take in about anything between 25 to 35 monkeys every year, little orphans. Right.
Okay. And your purpose then, after they've been rehabilitated, is then to reintroduce them into the wild?
That would be the ultimate goal, yes.
Right. And how do you go about doing that?
Look, it's very difficult at the moment in South Africa because, as you know, this country is still in a little bit of turmoil with people not knowing who owns what. So one has to be careful in these situations because you don't want to just release them in the area where people are going to start hunting them.
Absolutely,
At the moment, we sort of held back. We've got enough property to actually look after them as they are without
That's
having to be a deputy. But what one would actually do is go in and put up a, what we call a soft release enclosure out into a wild area. And they'd have to live there for about 3 months while they get used to the area. And once they're used to the area, they'll take down the soft release enclosure and they'll sort of migrate into the area. Now, it's important to do that because the monkeys have to learn their surroundings. They have to learn what's there, what predators are there,
why
they still got protection. If you just chuck them and throw them in the bush, they're not going to know how to survive.
No, of course.
And killed. So
it's like a transition.
It is a transition that you've got to do. Yeah.
Understood. Okay, thank you so much, Dave. I'm going to see if Gregson wants to go to a break, and then I'm going to ask Deborah Brenker from Welshman Hall Gully to join us in this discussion. And we've also got Karen Howard Tripp, who is the trustee for Action for Animals Barbados. So, Rexon, are you ready for a quick break?
Yes, please. Thank you kindly. Just a timely reminder that this program is brought to you with the kind compliments of Roberts Manufacturing.
23, 24, 25.
Wait, Mark, what are you really doing?
Contain the dog food.
Seriously?
You know how expensive imported dog food is? I can't make sure this lasts until month end.
Don't be stingy with Fluffy's food. I told you to stretch your dollar. Buy Robert's Orvita Pet Dog Food. It got him the same thing as them other brands, but is less expensive.
Save money and support local with Robert's Chicken and Rice and Vita Pet Dog and Puppy Food from Vitamin Pet Foods.
Fluffy's so smart. Watch. The rain falls on the
roof.
See?
It's back over to Animal Careers with Gail.
Okay, thank you, Gregson. I just wanted, before we switch to Deborah Brenker, I just wanted to ask you one more question, Dave, which I think our listeners would find interesting. I know I certainly will. And it's the history around the vervet monkey. You know, if you know kind of like there, how they came into being almost in terms of like their evolution. And also as well, are there any kind of unique qualities that these monkeys have that distinguishes them from other primates?
Well, look, each primate species is unique in its own methods, I suppose, and in everything they do.
Yeah.
They're all, you know, all animals in the end of the day, they are essential to our ongoing environment. Now, vervet monkeys, basically, they also play a role very similar to birds because they are a distributor of seeds. So they help feed other animals. So the thing is, when they climb, you know, a lot of people say they're messy eaters, but there's a reason for that. So they... First of all, they got very small stomachs, so they can't eat a large amount of whatever they're supposed to be eating. But what they do is they'll eat it and they'll drop it. And this will feed other animals on the ground that can't basically climb trees. They also help pollinate because jumping from tree to tree, they disperse pollen, which basically helps the propagation of other trees and things. They also eat a lot of insect species. So they keep a lot of the insects under control. So when you remove this animal, you're basically going to increase the population of insects and things like you got in the area. You're going to cause a shortage for food for a lot of your ground-eating animals and things like this. So it may cause a little bit of a problem where that's concerned.
Right, I understand. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, nature doesn't make any mistakes. So everything serves a purpose and a very important purpose. I remember speaking to someone from the Barbados Sea Turtle Project, and we was talking about the sea turtle's role in terms of maintaining and keeping down the jellyfish, because being sea turtles, they eat jellyfish, a particular type of jellyfish as well. And if we don't have these particular sea turtles, what happens then is the jellyfish then become kind of like overpopulated. That causes a problem within the marine system. So it's quite interesting how everything is connected and how every creature plays such a vital role. And it's important for us as human beings to keep that balance, to somehow try to keep that balance, you know. And this is what we're trying to do here in Barbados. And this leads me straight to Miss Deborah Brenker. She's the director of Welshman Hall Gully, and she's going to tell us a bit about the history of the gully, why gullies are important in Barbados, and she'll also chat about monkeys. So welcome, Deborah.
Hi, hi. Afternoon, Gail, everybody.
So tell us, Deborah, a little bit about yourself and then something about Welshman Hall Gully for people who might not be aware of it.
Oh, I'm the director of Welshman Hall Gully. I'm a visitor attraction for the last 15 years. And I have a resident troop of monkeys, which I have been feeding on a regular basis for the last 15 years. And I have to admit, since things changed with the pandemics, I have a couple of troops now. Not crossing each other, but I do think I have about two troops now, which is interesting.
Okay. All righty. And in terms of the actual gully itself, when we say gully, because some people might call it a ravine in different, in, they have different names. So for our listeners, can you explain what a gully, you know, fundamentally is and why they are important to the, especially for our Barbados, I guess you can call it ecological systems.
Sure. Well, just gullies. Gullies are actually what makes Barbados uniquely special in comparison to all the other islands, because we're technically right. A rock in the middle of the ocean. We're a mm-hmm. coral reef that was risen, that was pushed up from the Atlantic plate, pushed the Caribbean plate up as a coral reef. And as it exited the ocean, it made these cracks. And these cracks have actually what have become gullies. And gullies are basically water courses. They can be from like a couple of feet to about 100 feet. But what they are water courses. So why this makes Barbados really quite special is the fact that instead of the rain just hitting the surface and going straight onto the ocean, the water is being trapped in the gullies. And at the bottom of the gullies, because we're made of coral stone, we have a lot of thick caves, which we call aquifers, and that's actually where we get our water. So gullies provide Barbados with water, but it also is, I did a little bit of research recently, and I found out that gullies actually make up about 5% of Barbados land mass and hold at least 80% of our native plants. And I looked at another a study done in 2004 that we have over 172 animal species found in gullies. So in terms of biodiversity in Barbados, most of our most of it is actually found in the gullies.
That is so interesting to know. And the gullies in Barbados are protected areas as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely not. Not one single square inch of Barbados is protected. Not one single inch. We have a few. We have one protected marine area. The government is trying to work on making a few more areas of protection of marine, but in terms of terrestrial, there's no protected areas.
I'm so surprised, based on what you've just said about the critical role that gullies play in our ecological system, not only just in providing water, but also in terms of the biodiversity and, I guess, animal life that you're talking about, insect life, which Dave has mentioned is so important, and he's explained the reason why. I'm surprised that the gullies are not protected, you know, areas of protection and kind of like tourist attractions, yes, but certainly not areas where, because I know sometimes people might use gullies as a dumping ground, you know, mm-hmm. which is very disconcerting at the least. I think that we have these really special critical areas on our island that are used as a dumping ground. And maybe if people knew the importance and relevance of gullies, maybe that might stop them from doing that, perhaps.
There's a lot of policy and there's a lot of information out there for government to do something, just nothing has actually ever been done. The information is all there. It just needs the willpower now to put it forward. Doing a little bit more research, I was looking at so for example, Barbados was almost completely, you know, deforested for sugarcane, and it was the gullies that were semi-managed and in a forest state. And I was just doing some reading up on, like, for example, monkeys definitely traditionally always stayed in the gullies, but gullies were also planted with a lot of fruit trees because it was the one place where people were still using it for food, medicine, water, transportation, you name it, they were still using it. But about 50, 60 years ago, land use changed. And so the gullies no longer are being planted with fruit trees anymore. We're not using them anymore. And then now the decline of sugar, the monkeys are now starting to move out of the gullies. And now we're starting to see more monkeys. But it's actually, it's it's a little bit more it's a little bit more detailed than just say there's more monkeys. They're actually having less to eat, and they're actually, and not even just have less to eat. The cane fields used to sort of trap them into like locations, and now that the cane fields are no longer being managed, they're now being able to travel. And in fact, okay. Again, I just did a little bit of research, and they're actually, Barbados has more forests right now than it ever had since the first colonials.
Because can you say that again? Can you repeat that again for me, Deborah?
There is more forested areas, like not big forests, just let's say green spaces now than there was since the time of the island was first colonized. And that's because of sugarcane, because of the sugarcane industry was, because it was the most dominant agriculture. It was most dominant economic, where we got our economics from. We're no longer doing it. It's not being cared for. So a lot of cane fields are now just left to bush.
Okay. It's
very interesting.
Yeah, it is actually.
It doesn't help monkeys.
Yeah, because really, it's nice. Yeah, it's nice to have the green areas, but the green areas need to also be serving some kind of purpose in terms of their biodiversity and what they can be doing for the island. So to me, I understand what you're saying. When you say bush, maybe All right. Deborah, I just wanted to ask you, you mentioned about the biodiversity of plant life in gullies. Mm-hmm. Welshman Hall Gully has some I've had a walk through there. It has some beautiful, beautiful plants. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the plants that you have in the gully, please?
It's a secondary forest for sure, but it's it's a fully mature, forest for sure.
Yeah.
And like the first plantation owner did plant it with nutmegs, and there's still a nutmeg grove in existence in the gully. And then there's one area that was specifically for, it's considered an orchard, and it's still got a lot of, it still has mangoes, breadfruits, guavas, soursop. So it's still actually still maintained as an orchard.
Wow, so that's fascinating.
A little piece of history in Welshman Hall.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Now, in terms of the green monkeys that we would see in South Africa, or Dave would see, and the ones here in Barbados, are they from the same kind of lineage, so to speak? What are some of the similarities, Deborah?
I was talking with Dave earlier about it, and we were talking, it was amazing how we're just discussing about how they're considered pests, then we're considered how they behave as family units, deterrents, everything. It's so similar. It's shocking that we're a small little island, thousands of miles away, and yet the monkeys' behavior is very similar, and human interaction with them and almost seems the same attitude towards them. It was quite shocking, quite surprising.
Yeah. I don't find it surprising, I don't find it surprising, though, because, you know, when you don't know how to handle a situation, then often that's where the conflict's going to begin, you know. So, and like, if you're a farmer or you want to become a farmer, you're cultivating your land, and then the monkeys, as you said, have moved out of the gully, and they're now kind of like, they're not necessarily populations growing, but people are seeing more of them because they're hungry and they're going into territories that they hadn't previously done or needed to do before. If the farmers don't know what to do, then it's going to be the same old story, you know. It's about the education. It's about letting them know exactly what they can do. And I guess getting the monkeys somehow back towards the gully areas or certain areas where they have an abundance of food that they don't need to really interact with humans. And though we're a small island, it's doable once we understand the population. Do you know when the last population survey was done for us to really get a proper understanding of the number of monkeys on the island, Deborah?
I heard it was about 10 years ago, but I saw that and I think it was a very sort of like, not ad hoc, I shouldn't say that, but it wasn't a very detailed. And then the one before that, I think, was done in the 80s.
Right. Okay, then. So before we can really probably properly assess the situation to know what we're dealing with. We do need to have an idea of the numbers and where these monkeys are predominantly, you know, the regions. I know that people are saying they're seeing monkeys in town now, where they never were, by they never used to. And some people are saying they even see monkeys trying to come through their kitchen window, you know. They're getting very bold as well in terms of their behavior. They're not shying away from people like they used to in years gone by. So I found that to be quite interesting as well. Okay, yeah. I'm going to just quickly say hi to Karen because she's been here patiently. And Karen, you're Karen Howard Tripp, and you are a trustee with the charity Action for Animals Barbados. And right. You grew up in South Africa. So can you tell us a little bit about what that was like for you before we jump into your interview?
Sure. I grew up not far from where Dave is situated. So I totally can relate to what he's doing. I was brought up amongst the animals, the monkeys. I was in game parks. Right. And they become part of your population. Unfortunately, right. They were considered pests then, like they are in Barbados now. But it was amazing to be brought up in a country that has such diverse wildlife. And what amazes me most is Africa is the only continent that you go to that you are actually the outsider. Africa belongs to the animals. Right. Africa's unique in that the animals own the space and we have encroached initially on them. So you are definitely the outsider.
Yeah.
Okay, Gail, let me interrupt you and Karen for just a wee bit, you need to remind our listeners that we are listening to Animal Craze, and it's coming to them with the kind compliments of Roberts Manufacturing.
23, 24, 25.
Wait, Mark, what are you really doing?
Contain the dog food.
Seriously?
You know how expensive imported dog food is? I gotta make sure this lasts until Montfair.
Don't be stingy with Fluffy's food. I told you to stretch your dollar. Buy Roberts Orvita Pet Dog Food. Ain't got any same thing as them other brands, but it's less expensive.
Save money and support local with Roberts Chicken and Rice and Vita Pet Dog and Puppy Food from Vitamin Pet Foods.
Fluffy's so smart. Watch. The rain falls on the
roof.
See?
Okay, Gail and Karen, carry on smartly.
Thank you so much. So, Karen, I understand as well that you've done, outside of your charitable work with Action for Animals, I know that you've also done a lot of work you work with an organization that helps the lions as well. How's that been going, just very quickly?
It's good, very good. We're relocating lions and tigers that are ex-circus animals.
Wow.
Into parks in South Africa. It's a massive task.
Yeah.
But it's moving. It's going well. There's a lot of animals out there that need to get back to where they were originally taken, where their roots are.
Yeah,
and there's some amazing rehab and closed off areas where they are reintroducing the animals back into. They can never be wild totally because of where they've come from, but they're so much better off.
Most
rewarding to see something move from a cage to the African bush.
Absolutely, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's such worthwhile work that you and Dave are doing in terms of like getting these animals back into the wild as much as you can so that they can have experience that in a safe way. I mean, it's amazing. It's not that long ago that we used to think it was okay to sit and to go to the circus and clap our hands and cheer while elephants were performing and lions were kind of like the lion keepers had the lions and have them jumping through fires of, you know, hoops of fire and things. And we thought that was entertainment. I know that we still, unfortunately, do have a few kind of zoos that can continue this, but they're becoming fewer and far between. And that's thankfully just social media. You know, a lot of the conservation organizations globally are now sharing the work that they're doing, which is helping to educate people. I know the Vervet Foundation, for example, has up to 100,000 Instagram followers,
you know, and growing. That's a lot of people that they're reaching and bringing awareness to about their conservation works with the vervet monkeys, which is brilliant, you know. So, Karen, you are with Action for Animals, like I've mentioned. And one of the things that the charity does is it's planting, especially before COVID, had begun to partner with Ross University School of Medicine and also Welshman Hall Gully. And the purpose was to plant fruit trees. Can you explain the reason why the charity started to do, well, it's obvious really, but why?
Mm-hmm. Having moved from Africa to Barbados, I saw exactly the same problem in Barbados, that the vervet monkeys are considered a pest.
Yeah.
And that people randomly shoot them. And that they're coming out of the gullies for food, bigger food sources, as they are not, you know. So my idea was, if we want to try and keep them within the gully areas or ravines, we would plant year-round fruit trees in different areas that the families move up and down, so that at different times of the years it would supply additional food for them. They would learn to be able to use that food and hopefully help the farmers in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that you said help the farmers in the long run, because obviously agriculture is really important. And some would say it's a dying trade in Barbados with the importation of a lot of our foods, you know. Our ground provisions sometimes are often imported. Our fruit are imported and certain vegetables and that. So we really want the farmers to be able to make a living, and also as well for our agricultural industry to grow. And in order for that to happen, we do need to strike this balance. And I know that there's some farmers that have found the way to actually, I remember visiting a farmer in, I think it was in St. Thomas, and they had quite a few acres of farmland, and they were adjacent to a gully. And you would think that being adjacent to a gully, that they would have kind of like a real problem with the monkeys. But when I spoke with them, and Deborah was with me at this time, when we spoke with the farmers, we discovered that what they had done was they had learned over very quickly, because they're making a living, that what they had to do was actually put up sufficient deterrents for the monkeys. And also, along with the deterrents, also make sure that the monkeys have their own separate food source, so that there's no need. Yeah. And they actually said that their problem wasn't the monkeys, it was humans. It was humans that would steal their crops. So that's interesting, you know, because when we talk, we always keep talking about the monkeys are the problem when it comes to farmers, but we need to talk more also about the humans that are the problem.
I think an important thing that Dave would be good explaining is the dangers of randomly shooting these monkeys.
Yeah.
If you shoot the alpha female, you cause absolute chaos within the family.
Yeah.
And from within that family comes repercussions.
Dave,
if you can explain how that works.
Yeah, that was brilliant. Thank you, Karen, for that. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, look, you know, in any family, your head of the family is very, very important. And when it comes to the vervet monkey, the female is actually the head of the family.
Wow. Now,
she's the one that basically...
I like that. Sorry. Carol, continue.
She's the one that knows where all the food and water sources are. The older the female, the more she's going to know where they can get food from. Now, the problem is when people shoot these animals, the younger ones don't know where to get the food sources from that they were getting throughout the year. So then they're going to look for easier food sources, which are going to be the farmer's land. So by shooting these animals, you're actually creating a bigger problem for yourself. So instead of providing for them, which Karen was mentioning, I love her thing about planting these fruit trees and things in the gullies, which I think, you know, not only can it feed the animals out there are poorer people in our society that we mustn't forget about as well. And these food sources could also provide food for them. If you had free mangoes and stuff that you could pick from the gullies, free guavas, this type of thing, people who couldn't afford to go and buy from the market have got this food source available. The monkeys can't eat everything. So the thing is, you're basically not just looking after them, you're looking after your communities as well, while protecting your agricultural thing. So at the same time, you can't go overboard with agriculture. You have to make sure you only go to a certain degree and there's something for everybody. When people,
when people
do agriculture, they must provide for the other animals and people basically in the area. As otherwise, as you say, you can have the human factor also stealing because, you know, you're hungry. If you're hungry, you're going to look for a food source. So it's important that we've got these provisions for everybody and we make it available. And also be careful what we're going to do because the repercussions of doing something without thinking can be far worse than actually studying it a little bit and seeing what's the best method to cooperate and work together.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, sometimes we want a quick fix and we know that we do have people in Barbados that are actually hired, you know, to that's part of what they do, to cull. We call it culling. I don't know if you have the same terminology in South Africa. We call it culling in Barbados. They cull the monkeys. And often you would hear them say, and you hear people say in general, oh, yes, you've got to shoot the alpha female or male or whatever. You know, that's automatically, because when you do that, then that's the one, you know, that's the one that's causing all the problem. But it's actually the alpha female, as you just said, and Karen and Deborah would know this, that's actually keeping it all together, you know, and keeping some kind of structure and order. And had there been enough food for them near the gullies, I guess the alpha female would make sure that the family stays within that area. So,
well, the thing is, as they say, you know, a dead person doesn't teach anybody anything. So, you know, you can't, if you kill something, it's not going to educate anybody because it's not there anymore. So
that's
the only
way
you can educate something is by teaching it about different food sources, where not to take food from and where to get food from. Once you shoot it, you've just caused mayhem. So it's a very stupid policy of trying to rectify a problem.
It doesn't work neither. Deborah, it isn't working. Can you explain as well why the shooting of the alpha female isn't working? Because, you know, people keep saying, oh, the population's growing. Well, I don't know whether it is or not. But why is what we're doing in Barbados not being effective, Deborah? Because it's the same discussion and the same kind of every year, the same kind of, oh, now we've got to cull the monkeys. Goes into the newspapers, a few farmers talking about how they losing their crops to monkeys. Let's cull the monkeys. But, you know, if it was working, obviously there would be no longer a need to have all of this culling, because everything will be balancing out. So what is it that we really do need to be doing, Deborah?
Well, that just says everything. When you shoot the alpha female, they lose all their knowledge about how to survive and that kind of stuff. And we're seeing more and more evidence now where people are saying, oh, the monkeys are becoming more emboldened. They're coming into your house. They're more aggressive. So real time that monkeys' behaviors are changing over time. And I found that this is happening in areas where it's known for shooting monkeys. And I even had a friend of mine, I spoke to her, like when she first had monkeys around her farm, I told her how to deal with it. She never had an issue with monkeys. So I said to her, this was like 15, 20 years later, I said to her, how are your monkeys going? She says, they are so different. They're much more destructive now. She says they put out food for them. They're not going for the food. They're actually just going to like rip up things. And she said she saw all, this is just one person. And this was in an area that she says that she sees a lot of shooting.
Right.
She hears the shooting. So we are seeing right now in Barbados, they're starting to see a change in monkey behavior. And this is absolutely being caused by this shooting. This is a tradition for hundreds of years to shoot the alpha male, alpha female. I once spoke to a hunter and I said, why that philosophy? Why are you doing that? And he really had nothing to say other than, well, that's what we do. So what you do is you shoot
them first.
It becomes somebody else's problem. But if the whole, what did I say to myself? What's the reason of shooting? Are we trying to reduce the population?
What's your objective?
Is that really a solution? And it's doing something without really understanding why you're doing it,
the long-term effects, the consequences, yeah. So in terms of planting the fruit trees near to gullies, is that something that we need to be doing more of, that we need to see if we can get the government involved in projects like what, you know, you're doing with Frost University?
It would be wonderful. It would be wonderful to get the government involved in planting, but the government also funds the shooting of them.
Yeah, because you see, here's the thing.
So I'm not sure how you get them involved in helping on one side and shooting on the other.
See, here's the thing, Karen. The government, you know, there's a lot of projects at the moment with the 1 million trees, okay? There's that going on. So what I'm thinking is that as part of this 1 million tree planting, that the government needs to actually consider the importance and critical role of our gullies and the biodiversity which dwells within and around the gullies. That would obviously include our monkeys. So I think that the initiative to plant trees is great. But it has to be done in a way that's actually beneficial to everyone.
Because, well, I think, you know, it's a win-win. Area, I think it's a win-win situation. As Dave said, people get more food and the animals get more food. So there is no downside to it, really.
Yeah.
Okay, Gail and Karen, let me interrupt you again. Seems unfortunate, it's you two all the time. But nevertheless, let's take a short word.
We don't mind.
Let's take a short word from Robert's Manufacturing. We'll be back in a second.
Thank you.
23, 24, 25.
Wait, Mark, what are you really doing?
Counting the dog food.
Seriously?
You know how expensive imported dog food is?
I gotta make sure this lasts until Montfair.
Don't be stingy with Fluffy's food.
I told you to stretch your dollar. Buy Robert's or Vitapet dog food. Ain't got any same thing as them other brands, but it's less expensive.
Save money and support local with Robert's Chicken and Rice and Vitapet dog and puppy food from Vitamin Pet Foods.
Fluffy's so smart. Watch. The rain falls on the
roof.
See?
Okay, Gail, back over to you.
Thank you so much.
Gail, can I ask Dave a question? There's a belief, Dave, that if you feed the monkeys, the family sizes will grow exponentially and the troops will become huge. Is this so, or is it based on available roaming site and land area they have access to?
You know, it's also like a little argument we were having with somebody here in South Africa. And I was going to say, you know, it seems like your poorer population seems to have more children than your richer, more educated people in the end of the day. So the same kind of thing is going to apply for monkeys. They're not, you know, the thing is, it's not something that they just go out and breed more than they normally breed.
Right.
It doesn't matter what you do, you're not going to change their breeding behavior.
That's important to know.
That's exactly the question I'm asking.
The same thing I'm going to say is by shooting and causing an imbalance. And you might have something now that I'm going to lose someone. You might have the younger monkeys starting to breed at a younger age because they're worried about becoming extinct in the end of the day. So you have to be careful of things that you do. As I said, it's a repercussion of those type of things, especially you know, remember your alpha male and your alpha female sort of dictate what's going on in the troop. Also the mating and things like this that's happening. If she doesn't have her child first, she'll pinch the baby of a younger female, okay, of one that's not so higher ranked. And the unfortunate thing is that little baby will end up dying because the alpha female does not have milk. So it is one thing that they are controlling their own population. Now, the trouble is when you're disrupting this pattern, you might cause a whole lot of the younger females to carry on carrying their babies, increasing the population. So as I say, a lot of the stuff that they're advocating is actually causing a problem for them in the long run.
Thank you, Karen. That's one of the questions that I had as well in mind about, because it's something that people always say, if you keep feeding the monkey, if you keep planting food for them, they're going to breed more, we're going to see more of them. When in actual fact, it's the culling and the shooting that's causing the imbalance and causing the problem. And what Dave said makes perfect sense, that the younger ones will start breeding earlier and more because they want to keep they do not want to become extinct. So that really is something that they need to listen to.
And it's also controlled by the alpha female, the whole family, as Dave said. So by removing her, it's just chaos and
which is what we're seeing. And I really do hope that we can, you know, have the people that need to know this to kind of like pay attention and understand it, maybe connect. You know, I'm hoping that now that we've opened up the dialogue with the Vervet Foundation and Dave from South Africa, that Barbados can actually start. You know, there's nothing wrong with us kind of like, we do it in other matters. So I don't see why we can't do it with our animal welfare issues. We can start collaborating and working on an international level with different agencies so that we can get, you know, we can share information because Deb was very knowledgeable. You're very knowledgeable, Karen, as well. So it's, we can learn off of each other. And as well, what we can do is find solutions that are beneficial to the long-term sustainability. That's what we want. We would like to have, because tourists love coming and seeing our monkeys. Yeah. So we want to keep our monkeys, but obviously we don't want them raiding in, going into people's gardens, you know, terrifying their dogs, jumping on the roofs, all that kind of thing. So we need to do the things that we need to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, man has encroached on their land so much that we've squeezed them into certain areas. Now, the reason they come in your house is that, first of all, they're opportunists.
Uh-huh.
But now there's houses right next to where they used to live, or in the middle of where they used to travel.
Yeah.
So it's not, I don't think it's them becoming bolder. They've always been opportunists, but you've gone and knocked down trees and build a house there.
Right.
They are going to come. So we do
that
have to work together. We have to work together to protect the gullies and areas.
Absolutely. Now, there's something that you said about them becoming bolder because of the fact that we're encroaching on their territories and their areas. And I've spoken to a couple of people. One person lives in the area of Maxwell, and the other person was near the Waterford area. Now, if we start with Maxwell, they had built the hotel there.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I won't say the name of the hotel. But a hotel has been built there. But what's happened is that there was also a lot of trees in that area that were home to the monkeys. They did have some food in that area. So once you knock the tree, if the monkeys are still there, all right, they're still there trying to survive. But because you're not doing things in a way that you're not thinking it through, okay, then it's like, again, I'm going to go back to the sea turtles.
Yeah.
If you know that sea turtles are nesting in a particular region, all right, and we have something called the blue economy, which we say is important. We say that our marine life is important. It makes sense then to sit down with all the relevant stakeholders and say, look, what can we do to preserve in some way the turtles that are nesting? What do we need to do? What kind of lighting can we use to stop these hatchlings from coming into the road? What can we do? And, you know, you work on that. You find a solution. It's the same thing. You know, planning and thought needs to go into what we're doing. Waterford is another example. That was an area, again, that had lots of trees, was home to the monkeys. Now, we are beautifying Barbados, okay? That's the buzzword at the moment, that we're beautifying Barbados, which is great. We want to have parks, you know, it's lovely to have parks. But parks for people to sit in and look pretty is all very well and good. But when it's destroying our biodiversity, our butterflies, which I know you're passionate about as well, Karen, the importance of our pollinators, when we're disrupting our pollinators, which provide the pollination and help the crops to grow, okay, and also, again, our food for the monkeys and shelter for the monkeys, because the monkeys do live in the trees and stuff. That becomes a problem. So you knock down the water to build the pretty parks and whatnot. But then people now say, oh, my gosh, the monkeys are all around. Well, what do we expect?
Yeah, there has to be a balance.
There has to be some kind of balance.
On a small island, which is only 166 square miles, Dave, so it gives you some idea of its size, there has to be, everybody has to give, because space is limited, to live together in harmony.
Yeah. So In terms now, I don't want to say in culling, but if we were to do culling, all right, because I don't know if it's something that we can suddenly stop overnight, okay? What would be the right, and anybody can answer this, maybe Dave or Deborah, if we had to continue, this is for Barbados, because, you know, we've had talks before about the culling, what would be the right way to cull then? I know it's a horrible thing to think about and talk about, but it's important. What is the proper way to cull so that we don't, to cause the least disruption then? Deborah, would you be able to jump in on this one?
The only thing I would suggest, if the idea of culling is just like, you got to know what you're doing in terms of the numbers. Do we have an overpopulation? So for me, the biggest thing we'd have to find out is to get a population count. Okay. And then maybe in the population count, maybe identify a few hot spots where there seems to be a lot more monkeys than if we try to figure out what's the, you know, land space that they need. But just okay. To go around nearly, we're not culling in Barbados. We are randomly shooting individual.
Yeah. Farmers. Yeah.
Now, culling is a North American term for, it should be based on science.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very kind of, what the effect it has on people as well is very, I don't know if they realize, it's very traumatic for persons. I mean, a lady recounted to me that a man came onto her land, her private land, and actually went up to her house and said, "Oh, I'm here to shoot monkeys."
Yeah.
Just like that, you know. I mean, this is not the Wild West, you know. And he actually went onto her private land to shoot monkeys. And then you hear children that are hearing these gunshots ringing out. People don't know what's going on, you know. It really does need to be thought out a lot more. And we need to have like a discussion, maybe, like I said, collaborating with the Vervet Foundation. So, Karen, I would ask for you to continue, you know, the dialogue.
Sure.
With Dave as well, so that we can kind of like see if we can work together, see if we can bring in the Ministry of Agriculture as well. Because I really want to find a solution. The whole point of doing animal craze is, yes, it's nice to talk about fluffy, fluffy, cute animals, but we need to discuss the issues that are really, really kind of like affecting us as a nation and find solutions. Talk is great, but we need to find solutions. And I think that Dave has some really, you know, sound ideas. You know, people that are listening, I'm sure, will have learned so much already, you know, about why we're seeing these behaviors. And we don't want a situation like we have in St. Kitts. Deborah, what, you know, the situation in St. Kitts is where the monkeys have become very aggressive, which is what you was talking about earlier, isn't it?
Okay, Deborah, your turn to be interrupted. So give me a second or two and I'll come back to you, just to show there being fear around here. Not just Karen interrupting. I'm going to interrupt Deborah for a second or two with Gail. We'll come back in just a moment or two with more of Animal Craze.
23, 24, 25.
Wait, Mark, what are you really doing?
Counting the dog food.
Seriously?
You know how expensive imported dog food is? I gotta make sure this lasts until Montfair.
Don't be stingy with Fluffy's food. I told you to stretch your dollar. Buy Robert's or Vita Pet dog food. Ain't got any same thing as them other brands, but it's less expensive.
Save money and support local with Robert's Chicken and Rice and Vita Pet dog and puppy food from Vitamin Pet Foods.
Fluffy's so smart. Watch. The rain falls on the
roof.
See?
Okay, we have about 6 minutes left. Go ahead, Gail.
Okay, thank you. So I just wanted Deborah to explain the situation in St. Kitts and how it can become Barbados. She's already touched on it a little bit, but can you explain what the monkeys are like in St. Kitts so that we can get an idea as to what could happen here, Deborah?
The monkeys there are extremely aggressive. Very destructive. They've been doing it for a lot longer than Barbados in terms of like being very aggressive towards the monkeys. So it's a generational ingrained response now. So it's I was hoping Barbados wouldn't get like that, but now I'm starting to talk to more farmers, and we're heading in its direction. But do you mind if I ask a question, though, Gail, to Dave?
Because yeah, of course, please do. Go ahead.
What's your opinion on culling of the monkeys, and has it worked? Have you seen anything working with monkeys, particularly vervets in South Africa?
Well, I mean, just to get back to the original question is how do you work out what's the best way to cull any kind of animal? And one's got to realize you're talking about a primate species here. They're the same as us. If I say to you, okay, well, we're overpopulated, please choose somebody in your family who we've got to recruit. I mean, do we take your grandmother out or your grandfather, or do we start with the younger children? So what is our best options going to be there? Because this is exactly what the decision that you're asking people to make. Or do we actually take out the whole family? If we take out the whole family, we have a biodiversity problem because you're taking out, you know, a whole problem thing there. So, you know, a lot of this comes down to, otherwise, do we have to have methods of controlling their population by either vasectomizing males or doing something with the females and things like this, which might be your better option, just to cut your population down to a certain degree. But before you do anything like this, yes, getting the numbers and to see if they're growing, because people naturally lie. You know, they're going to tell you they're seeing more animals, where you might not be seeing more animals. There might be a lot less, but because the food sources that these animals used to feed on are no longer there, they are coming closer into the towns or the areas where there are people, where they can find food, and therefore we think we're seeing more of these animals. So you can't control something unless you've actually decided or actually worked out, is there a problem, or is the problem the food sources and we've got to start replanting or doing something? There's enough for them. Barbados is a very difficult situation because, as you say, you've got a small contained area, and yes, you know, even the human population is growing. We know that. So, I mean, we're also trying to get control over the humans and say, please, guys, we don't want you to have six members of a family. Try to get it down to two or whatever so that the island can basically continue growing. We've got to have a look at the same kind of thing. You've got another primate species here that might be growing. And what is going to be the best way of controlling those populations? Shooting has never solved anything besides causing this disruption that you're basically hearing what everybody's saying, because the knowledge is not there. If I keep on taking out your grandfathers and grandmothers, who's going to spread that knowledge down to the children?
David, thank you.
This is the whole thing. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you said that. And the reason why I asked the question about culling is because it's what is done here in Barbados, you know? So if it's going to be done, I wanted to know how it could be done. But you've answered the question by saying, really, it's not really an option. It shouldn't be an option. We need to take that off the table and look at other methods. And the idea of vasectomies, contraception, maybe that is something that we can look at and see how that can work. But what I would like us to do is, well, what I would like you guys to do is really to meet, you know, to meet outside of this radio show and start the dialogue. And then once you come up with a plan as to how, Dave, you can, you know, help us with this through your own experience with the primates back in South Africa and your knowledge on that, what we can then do is maybe set up a meeting with the Right Honourable Minister Indawe and also the Chief Agricultural Officer, Keely Holder, who I know Keely Holder really has an interest. You know, she's actually willing to kind of like, she's open to suggestions and ideas. This is her one of her areas that she's working on. So I think, Deborah and Karen, it'd be worth having another meeting with Keely, giving her an update that we've spoken, we've made connection with the Vervet Foundation. You know, they've got some great ideas. We can visit their website. It's very informative. Learn about what they're doing, their programs, and see how we can work with them to kind of like manage our own monkey population, help with our farmers to preserve their crops and have their livelihoods, and also protect our biodiversity. So that sounds like a plan, ladies, you know, let's work on that. And we've got Ross University Medical School as well, who I'm sure would be willing to kind of like volunteer and continue helping in whichever capacity they are able to. So we've got lots of support on this, I believe. Sound like a plan?
Yeah, we do. I'd love to see a helpline and a designated vets who could help, like Dave has, to rehabilitate accidental car, you know, and that would be a wonderful project too, and he would be wonderful.
Okay, sorry, that sounds like
just throw one more thing out there is also don't rule out our children. A lot of our schools and things like this have got our environmental sectors to the schools and things, and I think it's very important for us to throw these questions out to our youngsters, especially in the schools, and ask them to come up with ideas as well.
Brilliant. I love it. Yeah, that
sometimes
sounds like a great
thing. Our
ideas aren't
as good as the new thinkers and the new children coming up.
Oh, I love that. Yes, yeah.
And getting the education department and your schools and the environmental side of your schools involved with the children coming up with ideas,
yes,
I think very, very important.
Important.
Thank you for that. Yeah, we will do that. We will definitely do that, Dave. And the schools are just opening back up, actually, from tomorrow. So I want to wish all the school children and teachers all the very best with that. I think it's great for the children because it's going to help them to grow and become strengthened by all the rapid changes that they're going through, which makes for better humans. So we've actually come to the end of the show. It's gone really quickly. I just want to thank you, Dave, so much for joining us. I know it's late there, so have a good night's sleep.
Thank you.
Deborah, thank you so much once again for for joining us. And Karen, thank you as well for the brilliant questions you were asking, Dave. They were really, really great. So I look forward to this conversation continuing. And I thank you, Gregson, so much for having us again. And I hope our listeners enjoyed Animal Craze. Thank you and good evening.
Thank you,
good
Gail.
Good evening, everyone.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you to her guests as well. The only gentleman on board tonight, Dave. Thank you, Dave, all the way in South Africa. And we had Deborah and Karen here in Barbados. Thank you, Gail, once again. You've been listening to Animal Craze. Tune in for the repeat on The Beat 104 on Tuesday at 7 in the evening. And also another episode coming your way, God's willing, next week, Sunday at 4:15 right here on The Voice of Barbados, 92.9 FM. Good evening, everybody. And until next weekend. We thank, of course, Roberts Manufacturing.
23, 24, 25.
Wait, Mark, what are you really doing?
Contain the dog food.
Seriously?
You know how expensive imported dog food is?
I gotta make sure this lasts until Montfair.
Don't be stingy with Fluffy's food. I told you to stretch your dollar. Buy Roberts or Vitapet dog food. It got in the same thing as them other brands, but it's less expensive.
Save money and support local with Roberts Chicken and Rice and Vitapet dog and puppy food from Vitamin Pet Foods.
Fluffy's so smart. Watch. The rain falls on the
roof.
See?